Welcome to the Anaheim Calling Podcast, Wednesday night edition here, post-Christmas edition. Hope everyone had a great and fantastic and Merry Christmas. I know I sure did. Got a lot of cool gifts. Jake, I hope you didn't get any coal this year in your stocking or your presents.
No, I didn't. I was definitely a good little boy this year.
Yeah. I got a Sprouts gift card, so Shout out to my parents for paying for my groceries.
I got a Nintendo Switch.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, my roommate got one. I was watching him playing Zelda tonight. I was like, damn, this is like fun.
I've yet to crack that game open. I've been playing all of Super Mario Odyssey right now.
Oh yeah, that one looks sweet too. I need to check that out. But anyway, to the hockey, a team that probably deserves some coal in their stocking after tonight. The Anaheim Ducks losing this one 4-1 against the Vegas Golden Knights in what was kind of a bizarre game where the Ducks came out extremely hot in the first period. And I don't really want to call it hot because they were playing a legitimately good team game. I thought that those top three lines, you felt like it was really clicking.
Well, and you could add in that the fourth line was clicking. I mean, Richie and Shaw were, like, every single line was creating chances. It was fun.
Yeah, and it kind of felt a little bit like, okay, you know, the Golden Knights are probably, this is not their best, but at the same time, you know, the Ducks healthy now, really only down to Corey Perry. They're a Corey Perry away from being, you know, fully healthy. You're like, okay, they've had some time here to just kind of rest, maybe gel a little bit, and you know, now everyone's healthy, or almost everyone's healthy, and you would think, okay, like this is maybe something that's real. And as we would find out, it turned out not to be the case, at least not for tonight's purposes. But the Ducks start the game off, like I said, really hot. Ricard Raquel with a really nice goal off of a pass from Jakob Silverberg, centering it, and Raquel just firing it far side on Malcolm Subban. I mean, just kind of an interesting first period. There were so many neat little moments that I thought really showed what this team is capable of when it's firing on all cylinders. I mean, Raquel and Getzlaff, especially early on, had a couple of just beautiful kind of stick handling displays, just protecting the puck, making plays down low. Kevin Waugh getting on the forecheck in that first period. Just like a lot of good things happening for Anaheim at first.
Yeah, it was really impressive because it felt like it was kind of a little bit of everything. There were some very clean zone entries that led to a bunch of chances. They were really aggressive on their forecheck to get in and kind of get on top of the Vegas D to force them to make some mistakes, and they made them. And the Ducks were able to kind of get on it and create a bunch of chances. I think at the end of the first period, the Ducks had, I'm trying to remember. I think it's around 12 scoring chances. Let me quickly kind of find. I had sent out a tweet.
That's what it felt like.
it was insane how many great chances. Here we go. This was kind of with a couple minutes left. I believe it was before the Theodore goal, actually, in the first period. But there were 20 shot attempts for, 9 against, 12 scoring chances for, 5 against, 7 high danger shots for, and 2 high danger shots against. So it was just a really dominant and fun period.
Yeah, and like we kind of have been saying here, every line had kind of their time in the sun in that first period. I thought that Kevin Waugh, Adam Henrique, and Silverberg showed some promise. And even like you mentioned, Logan Shaw with Antoine Vermette and Nick Ritchie, I mean, they had some good looks. Ritchie probably had 2 or 3 really good looks at the net and just couldn't bury them. And it's kind of like every best case scenario that we had in our heads about what this team can look like when it's actually fully fleshed out, it seemed like it was coming to fruition that first period. I thought Ryan Kessler, we'll get more to him later, but I thought he looked good.
Yeah.
Probably not yet in peak physical form, but he looked solid. You know, that fourth line, Antoine Vermette in a reduced role, making plays. And then obviously Ryan Getzlaff and Ricard Raquel doing their thing. So it felt like, all right, like this is,
yeah,
this is happening. This is what we've been waiting for.
This is what we all talked about when we were like, oh, I guess like, even though like they're not doing great, we got to wait and see until they're fully healthy and kind of this is what we had thought we might see coming into the season. And even the defense, even guys like Bojman and Bieksa for most of the first period were fine. And they were getting the puck out of the zone quick. It felt like the Ducks really weren't hemmed in their zone at all. There were maybe 1 or 2 dangerous chances that I can really remember. There was like one from March or so, but it was puck in, puck out, get it into the other zone, get a bunch of chances. They chip it out real quick. You get the puck back, put it back in their zone. And it was just constantly attacking, constant pressure. And it's kind of what you want to see out of this team when they're fully healthy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like we said, it's every kind of best case scenario materializing. And also, I think the fact that it happened is a good sign for Anaheim. Yes. It shows that there's something maybe percolating underneath there, but it seemed like just as quickly as it happened, it just as quickly vanished. And, you know, Shea Theodore on a play that, you know, kind of just a weird broken play in Anaheim zone where guys get cut out of position. Mm-hmm. Shea Theodore on that left side is a left-handed shot. Just a snipe. I mean, you know, when you think of what a snipe is, that's it right there. Just goes short side on John Gimson, crossbar and in. And look, Shea Theodore having a pretty good streak here with the Golden Knights and kind of delivering on that promise that we all expected. So that must have been a really nice moment for him.
Yeah, it was a perfect shot. What else can you say? On that play, I do want to – you're going to be shocked by this, but I'm going to go to bat for Bieksa a bit on this play because a lot of people were
critical. All right. I'm here. Let's hear this.
And this is going to be real shocking coming from me because I don't ever want to go to bat for him. But he was kind of put in a really bad situation. I was seeing a lot of people ragging on him because kind of that's the easy thing to do. I do it a lot also. By taking, I can't remember the person, but maybe it was Nosek coming down the middle, and he took him and left Theodore the wide open lane. And a lot of people were kind of blaming him. Why did he go to Nosek as compared to Theodore, who was coming in with the puck? To me, there were just kind of two options there. Both were bad. Either he stays like he did, then Theodore basically has to make a perfect shot to beat Gibson. He's kind of trusting his goalie to try to make the save there, basically forcing the perfect shot, in order to score, or he can jump to Theodore. Theodore makes the pass to Nosek. Nosek has basically a short breakaway in on Gibson. It has a much higher quality chance to score. Yes, Bieksa, it's easy to blame him on that play, but he was put in a bad situation. He probably made the higher percentage play by taking Nosek out and forcing Theodore to take the shot. To me, a lot of that play results in the three forwards. Both wingers ended up on the same side of the ice in Richie and Shaw, and Vermette actually was over there also. And then Vermette, when he gets beat with the pass, instead of curling over to try to get into Theodore's lane, he kind of just trails behind Nosek and is kind of in no man's land. And so kind of going back to the original point, there's a lot of breakdowns that occur before that Theodore shot and before Bieksa stays on Nosek, and those are much bigger concerns for why that goal happened.
Yeah, and I'm glad you point that out. And, you know, it's something that we've talked about in this pod before where so many plays in hockey, there's like layers and chain reactions yes. that lead to the eventual goal. Bieksa happens to be in a lot of those situations, yes. but it, you know, for the sake of fairness, like you said, on that play, can't really just pin down one guy as the sole reason. But it's funny we say this about Bieksa now and how it wasn't really his fault. You fast forward now to the second period, and him and Francois Beauchemin get stuck out there for what was probably one of the longest shifts in NHL history. I mean, the Ducks just for whatever reason get stuck on a line change. Vegas controls it in the Anaheim zone. Bieksa and Beauchemin get stuck out there together. The Golden Knights are actually able to change lines while keeping the puck in the Anaheim zone, which is usually the telltale sign of just getting completely outplayed yeah. in that scenario. So, you know, it's funny because I even tweeted out after that first period, I thought Bieksa actually made a couple of really nice plays with the puck and just seemed like generally competent. And right as I said that, you know, just had some horrendous plays in that second period. So, you know, as well as the Ducks played in that first period, it almost instantly came crashing down as that second period started, and it didn't really get all that much better from there. I mean, maybe the tide of the game turns when Ryan Getzlaff makes a smart little push pass to Ricard Raquel behind the net, who then brings it around and gets a cross-ice pass over to Kasha. The puck gets, I believe, tipped by Cody Eakin going across, but, you know, maybe if Kasha gets a stick on that puck, then the Ducks are up 2-1, and who knows what happens, but it really felt like as soon as that intermission happened, something clicked with the Golden Knights, and the Ducks just never recovered.
Well, I take it back even further. That I just think that Theodore goal is kind of a turning point in this game. Because,
bit of a backbreaker, yeah.
Yeah, because you look at that first period, and like we talked about, it was really great. Everything was great. And even with a Theodore goal, it's a really good period by the team. But the fact that that goal came at the end of the period to tie it kind of really sucked a lot of the momentum away from the team. And it would be hard not, or it had to take away some of the confidence that they had, that they were going forward with, that this kind of happened. If that Theodore goal happens before Raquel scored, maybe early on in the game, and then the Ducks can keep pushing, then they get the goal at the end of the period, it's a different game. And it's just when those goals occur, and that one kind of happened and sucked all the momentum away. And then, like you said, I'm looking at the hockey stats shot charts, and there's a really big jump up by Vegas during the middle or beginning of the second period. So that is probably what you were talking about with the Ducks getting hemmed in. But I will say kind of the second period wasn't too bad after that. That kind of brought Vegas back up to where the Ducks were in terms of evening out shot attempt differentials. The Ducks, I mean, here's kind of something I'll pose to you on this. Do you think that this was the Ducks kind of being down on themselves after that goal happened, not forechecking as well, not attacking with as much pressure? Do you think that this is more on Vegas making adjustments?
I think it's, God, I hate to say this, but I feel like it's a bit of both, where yeah. I feel like Anaheim had something working in the first period that may have honestly been unexpectedly working, because I feel like you go into a game now with, look, you're inserting a second line center into the lineup, and you haven't had him for the entire season, and everyone's roles kind of get readjusted. And obviously these guys have been in positions before, but I feel like that first period probably wasn't what any of them were expecting. They were probably just thinking, all right, the lines have been rearranged. Let's come in, play simple, and let's see what happens. And instead come out, play real well. Second period, Golden Knights make some adjustments. I mean, they got a lot more aggressive in the forecheck. As Brian Hayward pointed out a couple times, and the Ducks didn't really have a response for that. And I feel like a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were kind of adjusting to this new lineup. But at the same time, it's like, geez, there wasn't like one thing, one avenue. And to me, I look at special teams. I always look at special teams, because to me, that's such a controllable thing. And you look at Anaheim's power play tonight, no Brandon Montour in that first power play unit. And it's something I've harped on all season, but you look at the fit with that first unit. I believe it was Fowler on that left side instead of Montour, and you just no clear one-timer option and just kind of an awkward fit. And Getzlaff being out there makes up for a lot, but they don't really have the kind of spacing, you could say, the passing lanes being opened up because of different threats along the ice, and it just makes for just kind of an awkward-looking power play. I mean, they did get a nice chance at the end of the first power play where Fowler gets a slap shot, rebound kicks out in front, and the Ducks scramble for the rebound, but that was just kind of an innocuous play that turned into a chance. There wasn't a feeling of, they weren't really, it's not like they were imposing their will. There wasn't really any clear danger to the Golden Knights that they had to just be aware of, and I feel like if you're not going to give yourself an advantage in those situations, then you're going to make it really tough on yourself to kind of overcome the rest at 5-on-5. So yeah, I'm a little kind of surprised that Montour has just been totally phased out of that first unit. And he's kind of been totally phased out of the power play as a whole. I mean, you look at how they're using him on that second unit, and he's not even on the left side anymore as the one-timer option. You would think that he would be, as I feel like he's kind of proven himself already, but I mean, he is young. It's his first season. It's just a little surprising.
Yeah, I think I actually saw him on the right-hand side at one point.
He was never, and that's, it's been like that for a couple games now.
Strange. But yeah, I think I agree with that. I think a lot of it kind of, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. That's definitely a little bit of both. On the power play, though, it was very interesting to me that after both power plays, the Ducks gave up really, really golden opportunities to the guy coming out of the box.
Good pun.
Didn't even mean to do it.
Oh, man. Well, yes, so let's talk about those goals. So you look at the one that Cody Eakin scored, and to me, actually, even before that goal happened, James Neal gets a chance. I believe it was in the first period? Yes. And James Neal comes down out of the box. Brandon Montour gets just enough pressure on him to kind of force him into a bad shot. But later on in the game, the Golden Knights would kind of go back to that. I mean, not that that's a set play or anything, but Cody Eakin made a really nice move where he gets out of the box, doesn't really have a clear-cut advantage, so he kind of fakes that he's going to dump it in. Lindholm, I guess, bites on it, and then he just goes all the way down, Eakin does, and shoots it five-hole on Gibson. You know, I think Gibson would like to have that one back, but that's still a good look for the Golden Knights.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's interesting, though, that kind of, at least on the first play, the puck was pretty deep when it turned over late in the power play, and that neither of the defensemen jumped back to kind of get back in time. Because, I mean, I saw that puck go deep, and instantly my thought is, oh, guy must be coming out of the box. Defensemen are probably going to jump back. There's going to be no one holding the point. And it was just a shock to me that Neal had that clear of a breakaway. And then on the Eakins play, I think that was just, I mean, we very rarely say this, but that was a poor play by Lindholm.
He just kind of got outsmarted there, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like he didn't see it coming, because that's not really a play you see guys make.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of a key to this game so far, is that kind of we talk about it, and kind of like what I was saying, how shot differentials by the end of the second period weren't terrible, but Vegas kind of took advantage of a couple of opportunities and a couple of mistakes that were handed their way. Were pretty opportunistic.
Yes, well, on that note, actually, this segues perfectly into the third period, where Josh Manson, kind of a routine play, just, you know, everyone talks about the Ryan Getzlaff drop pass turnover 3-on-3 a couple years ago now, but I think Manson's here was just as bad, where there wasn't even really anyone behind him to support him, and he just drops it off to no one. And the Golden Knights, I mean, a team that is just tailor-made to play a counter-attacking style, pounce on that turnover. Marchessault has all the time in the world to make a play. Lindholm maybe doesn't pressure him as much as he should, gets it back over to streaking William Carls and Wild Bill. And at that point, it's 3-1 Golden Knights, only 27 seconds into the third period. And at that point, I felt like the game was over. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple episodes ago that we were talking about the Ducks' goal differential in the third period and just how it's not good and how, I mean, on the road trip, it was a lot of us talking about the Ducks not being able to defend while up two goals or up a goal or up how many goals in the third.
Or ever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But this is kind of the exact opposite, where it was very similar, where the Ducks were caught in the third and just couldn't produce anything. They got a fair amount of shot attempts, but shot on goal-wise, if you look at any type of like chart on it, it's kind of like they went dead in the third period.
They did. That's exactly how it felt. And you know what's weird about that is, like, they've had a few days off now. You would think this would be the game where they would have the most energy, and instead they had, like, turkey in their legs or something. I don't know.
Well, and one thing that you and I were talking about before we started recording that was very interesting to both of us was that it seemed like Carlisle tried to infuse a little bit of energy into the team by switching up the lines.
So that's something that I wanted to talk to you about, because I really thought that some of the combinations he rolled out as the Ducks were trying to claw their way back into the game, to me, were kind of the opposite of the lines you would want to score a goal. I mean, he had Richie with Getzlaff and Raquel at one point. He had Henry, Kasha, and Wagner together. Doesn't really feel like the combinations that would get you a goal when you need one.
Well, it all started with him taking Waugh and putting him on the fourth line and moving Richie up with Henrique and, who was it, Silverberg. And that was kind of the beginning of it. And I saw that. I was like, oh, this is not going to end well. It's very interesting to me, because for a coach that was really, really set in his ways, set with his lines for a good 5-10 game stretch when nothing was really working and took him forever to really make the adjustment and make the change with the lines, to not even give these new lines that he put together one game when at least for a period they were working really, really well together, meshing together. And even in the second period, Getzlaff, Kasha, and Raquel were working. Like, I can't really remember a shift that they got hemmed in their own zone and were really defending a whole lot. I'm trying to quickly just look at the Corsi 4 percentage for Getzlaff, and Getzlaff and Raquel were both...
Oh, they went off.
Yeah. Raquel was at 80% at even, or 79.17. Getzlaff was at 76.92. Kasha ended up at 68, probably due to a little bit of the line switching. But it's crazy to me that he made those changes, and Everyone loves the Kessler-Cogliano-Silverberg line for being a shutdown line, but it was strange to me that he took Silverberg off of the line with Henrique, because it seemed like Silverberg and Henrique had some chemistry, had got some chances, and it just it kind of seemed counterintuitive to make all those changes. And then they had Wagner with Henrique, and they had him out there in the last 5 minutes, and it's just like, what is Wagner going to do out here in these last 5 minutes? He's not going to create a whole lot of offense. And it just kind of seemed like a very desperation type move instead of kind of sticking with what was, I mean, as much as we were harping on like some negatives earlier, it was working in the game. They were getting chances. They were getting shots. And then he starts making these changes and they get nothing and they don't work.
Yeah, I actually, this is an interesting point that you bring up. I mean, I'm of two minds here, where on one hand, I feel like a guy like Richie in that first period, you know, was very good and had a lot of good looks. And usually I would like lose my mind over Kevin Waugh being swapped in Nick Ritchie's place, but it actually felt like that was maybe warranted tonight. But to your point about sort of the continuity of this lineup, I mean, it's like we've been saying a little bit here, you know, you get finally Ryan Kessler back. You want to kind of get this thing to mesh so you can just move on from this bizarre lineup that you've had all season. And just when it looks a little, it looks good in the first period, not so good in the second, to just immediately ditch all of it just to chase a 2-goal lead when, you know, I feel like there's a bigger picture here, which is you want to get these lines to mesh. And I understand as a coach, you're just trying to get the 2 points, you're in a tight playoff race, and you're going to do whatever it takes to get to that, to get to that goal. But I don't know. I feel like to me, and Claude Julien has been a guy who's, I've heard say this, is to stick to the lines that you've drawn up, it shows confidence in your decision-making, and it shows, I think it communicates confidence to the guys as well that, hey, like, I trust you guys to work together. There's a reason I picked you guys on the same line. And, you know, when things start to go south for a period, to kind of just scrap it all, it feels a little, like you said, kind of reactionary.
Yeah, you know? And I mean, I'm not exactly opposed to switching up the lines.
When me neither.
But doing it, like you were saying, after kind of one game, less than a game with these lines fully, it definitely feels reactionary. It doesn't exactly feel like it was the smartest move. And one thing that I did find funny is that the Ducks Twitter account actually had tweeted out, shutdown line activated. I saw someone retweet.
We're down 2 goals.
Yep. I had seen someone retweet it with a comment basically saying something along the lines of, wrong time to do this, or could have done this 2 goals again, or 2 goals ago. And it's very frustrating because it definitely felt reactionary. And it, I mean, like I said, they had like one or two shots on goal at the end of the game, they didn't really have a whole lot of shot attempts. It was like basically puck was going in and Vegas was getting it out. And it was like Vegas's structure was really impressive. That's one thing I will say.
Oh, yeah.
Their defensive structure was really good. They were very, very, very safe with the puck making. And by safe, I don't mean just throwing up the boards. They're making tape passes to get out of the zone and being very, very clean. And one thing I noticed is the Ducks, basically in the last 5-6 minutes, all they were doing were dumping it in and the puck was coming out. And at a certain point, you need the guys to have clean zone entries. And it was so frustrating to watch because Vegas was baiting the team to dump it in. They were. And the Ducks were playing into their hands because that's what a Carlisle system likes to have, that dump in. And that's the exact opposite of what the team needed at that point. They needed to attack the blue line with speed. A lot of what we saw that was successful in the first period, they did have some dump-ins that were working with the forecheck really going hard, but a lot of what was working was they were attacking the neutral zone and getting through the blue line and getting into the offensive zone with a lot of speed and kind of having those clean entries.
Yeah, when the Ducks were holding on to in that first period, like you said, they were definitely successful. And I'm going to co-sign everything you just said there. I mean, the way that the Golden Knights played, it was kind of reminiscent to me of a team in football, let's say, that loves to use the deep threat to its advantage to kind of open up the intermediate and short passes. And If you watch the Ducks and their forecheck tonight, as soon as the Golden Knights would get the puck back, the forwards would just start hustling back for Anaheim, but back towards their own red line, back towards their own blue line. And I feel like part of that is because they don't want to get caught in a stretch pass. I feel like that was a very concerted effort on their part. But what happens in that situation is that then you're giving the other team all this room to work with. And I'm sure that the coaching staff of the Golden Knights is smart enough to know, hey, they're going to try to take that option away. How can we use this newly found space? And it felt like the Golden Knights were doing that all night long. And then, I mean, like you said, to end that third period where, you know, the Ducks just are dumping it in using like defensive line combinations when they're down two goals, it was just an odd sight. And then, I mean, just to kind of add insult to injury, David Perron just at one point has the puck on his stick with one hand, shakes off like three guys, doesn't score on that play, but eventually gets it back and scores. So you have Shea Theodore, William Karlsson, and David Perron all scoring goals in the same night against the Ducks. I feel like at least one of those guys should probably still be on the team if there was any respect for like skill in this kind of decision making process. But I don't know. Kind of a rough night for the Ducks.
Yeah, I mean, Perron, you can't really say it was his decision to go back to St. Louis. Who knows why, what factored into that decision? But the Ducks tried to keep him, I think. So that one, I can't.
Yeah, Karlsson is also kind of an odd one because yes. He probably, like, I don't think anyone saw him as
no one saw this
player.
Coming.
But Shea Theodore, man, like, yeah. I will not let that one go for a while because, and you saw it in the third period. He had some beautiful chances.
Oh yeah,
just kind of roaming with the puck on his stick. Him and Thomas Nosek making plays. So, I mean, you don't want to beat the dead horse here, but it just feels like Anaheim kind of. It felt like they were kind of going against the wind a little bit tonight. I mean, you have one team on one end of the ice that's playing with skill and speed and, you know, not a perfect team by any means, but that's well coached. And then you have one team in the Ducks who's, I think, possesses a lot of talent, but is kind of playing this style that's just doesn't really work against some matchups, you know. And you see it with the way the Penguins play where they, like I said, they play with that deep threat of just the lob pass and the stretch passes. And it feels like maybe the Golden Knights took a page out of that book. Who knows?
Yeah, definitely. And kind of one brief note that I'll say on Theodore is kind of, I was one of the people that was kind of okay with losing him because it got Stoner off the books and it was kind of the best that we made of a bad situation. But watching him play, it's just like,
yeah,
it's frustrating because there were a couple of different ways that you and I probably had both worked out in our minds where the Ducks could make it out of the situation actually somewhat decently. And essentially what it came down to is the Ducks not wanting to ask Kevin Bieksa to waive his no movement clause and or buy him out or whatever the other situation would have needed to be. And it's just frustrating to watch that where they basically chose this veteran guy who has grit that they like for stuff that we all hate. And the reasoning why, as I'm rambling on, because I just absolutely despise the reasoning for having him on this team. And they chose him. They chose him essentially over Theodore. I mean, that's essentially what it came down to. Because in a realistic world, they could have either, I mean, just to briefly kind of rehash this argument, they could have had Bieksa waive his no movement clause for the expansion draft or bought him out or anything like that, and then traded Vatanen and been proactive with that. And those were the two options. The only thing that I will kind of counter my own argument with is Vatanen did have shoulder surgery, so who knows what his value would have been.
What his trade value was. Yeah, but there's so much, like, this is one of the most, I think, complex situations that I've kind of observed in the NHL with the Ducks, you know, expansion draft situation. And there was so much at play, but what it really boils down to is the Ducks had a ton of faith, I think, in their organizational depth, and with good reason. They have some, I think, legit prospects. And I think Brandon Montour, in their eyes, had shown enough to where, and look, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm just kind of, this is my takeaway, my observation. I feel like they had thought that he had shown enough to where they could feel comfortable letting a guy like Theodore go. But to me, if Bieksa's no movement clause had any part to play in this, first off, why is that relationship so worth preserving over a guy like Vatanen, who you're just going to run through the rumor mill every summer and that's okay? And secondly, you know, the Clayton Stoner thing is interesting to me because I think Clayton Stoner, first off, not as bad as people said, at least not in his last, let's say, year or so. yeah, you got that money off the books, but that wasn't the only way to get money off the books. And even if you got that money off the books, is that worth losing a guy like Theodore, who has clearly a lot of potential? So I don't know. We'll never, maybe someday, like I think we've talked about this before, maybe we'll get the inside story on the Ducks expansion draft. I would pay a lot of money to read that book. But yeah, anyway, just kind of a rough night for the ghosts of the Ducks past.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing I do want to add to this is, as we're talking about it and kind of as I'm a bit depressed seeing Theodore do that, I will kind of add that I feel like we can't fully assess that move and where the organization will be at until we see kind of like where guys like Larson, Pettersson, and Maher, where they all kind of fit
this
in.
This is true.
Because yeah. You bringing up the organizational depth kind of made me realize that, is that none of those guys are on the roster this year, but in the fairly short future, they probably will be on this team. And kind of that's where, if they saw him expendable because these guys were coming and were going to have a shot at making the roster, there needs to be a roster spot for someone. And so, I don't know. Paul Ip has one quick question for us from the Mixler chat, kind of on Theodore's, and I believe this is on Theodore. He's like, I don't understand why we didn't trade him before expansion draft for something versus lost him to Vegas.
Well, they didn't necessarily, like, first off, they traded him for future considerations. I think that was the official term. Yeah. And there was a lot of backroom dealing. But yeah, one other thing I want to bring up about this Theodore topic, since we're just going like all in on this.
Yeah, why not?
I feel like one thing to keep in mind, you know, for the Theodore situation is that it's going to be funny though, because for the next few years, the Golden Knights and the Ducks to me are like, they're just linked, because every game is going to be, we're going to have these same conversations. One thing you have to keep in mind. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say Vegas is basically linked to every team though.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Every team is kind of like gets to like, damn it. We should have kept that guy.
Every game's a revenge game for Vegas.
I mean, how do you think Columbus feels right now with William Karlsson? But I guess they don't really care that much. Since
Florida is probably the one that's the most snake bitten by all this.
See, I don't even Florida.
Okay. I don't think the organization is. I think the fans probably.
Oh yeah. If I was a Panthers fan, well, first off, I would not be a Panthers fan, but I would be beside myself. But one thing, so back to the Theodore thing, one thing I wanted to mention is that on one hand, losing Theodore to me stings in any respect, but what you have to keep in mind is that this team to me is built for the short term. This Ducks team up front, they have some young guys, but all the money is concentrated in a few older guys who are still talents, but they're built to win now. And in the Ducks' minds, losing a guy like Theodore to keep guys like, let's say, even Bieksa and Vatanen, who are clearly, I'll be generous here with Bieksa, but like guys who in their eyes are clearly NHL players already, whereas a guy like Theodore, you don't know that yet. And, you know, he had some rough patches earlier in the season, most of them playing alongside Bieksa, but you could understand why they would value keeping, you know, established NHL names and talents over a guy like Theodore, who's, you know, less established, especially for a team that's kind of in win now mode. So whole lot of unpacking to do there for sure.
Yep, definitely. And let's hit a couple of, unless you have anything else you want to do.
No. I'm like all expansioned out. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a couple stuff in the Mixler chat, both of them from GC Ducks fan, who I believe is at GC Ducks fan on Twitter, Georgie Khan. Does Bob Murray attempt to trade away Rasmussen? I don't think Rasmussen has any value. I think he just goes on waivers. I honestly think he clears waivers. I just think,
Who's claiming him? Yeah. Like, what has he done to, like...
Who
like,
wants...
I will never understand that signing, honestly.
I mean...
Just one of the all-time weird ones.
It's a guy that was signed to be a depth center. I can remember coming to the season, they were talking about him, Wagner, and Shaw being the fourth line. And then Grant...
And they tried it, and they sucked.
Well, and so, Grant was going to be the odd man out, and then Grant kind of did that weird hot streak thingy, I guess.
I don't know. That's why they lost tonight, Derek Grant. The Ducks are clearly just misevaluating Derek Grant.
This means Derek Grant's gonna come in the lineup and Kevin Waugh's gonna come out, isn't it?
Oh, you know that's gonna happen. I just want you to be mentally prepared for that.
Well, thankfully, I'm gonna be snowboarding on Friday, so I can kind of not really think about all this stuff.
Okay, more questions, I think.
Yeah, we've got one more. Well, this is just a comment. Stretch passing in the defensive zone equals capital no from GC Ducks fan. I don't mind stretch passes, honestly. I think that every once in a while they can kind of work. Just sometimes they can lead to definitely bad turnovers. But
well, they definitely work for the Golden Knights. So
yeah, and I mean, this kind of goes hand in hand with kind of the way I think about the game. Is I hate the safe plays. I find the safe plays annoying. I feel like they lead to nothing. They turn the puck over. Mm-hmm. They don't do a whole lot for you. Stretch passes are kind of along the same lines as any sort of creative play. Yeah, they can create a turnover against and a goal against, but they can also create a chance for and goals for. And so that's kind of why we watch hockey. It's fun. So,
yes. Yeah. Agreed.
My opinion on that. And then we have a Twitter question also, right?
Yes, we do. Christian De La Rosa, who I believe is from Sweden and who I mistakenly called Jacob De La Rosa earlier. So, he might be a Jacob De La Rosa fan. I am not because I watch him play for the Canadiens. But he said, due to the time, and this is, by the way, a very thoughtful question. He actually thought ahead of time, I'm going to miss the game, so I'm going to ask my question now. Just great, great thoughtfulness on Christian's part. But anyway, to the question, due to the time difference, I won't be able to join in the Mixlr chat, hashtag ACPod. So I dropped my question here. What's your thoughts on the Ducks defense pairings for next season? Larson and Pettersson? Or is one of them gone by deadline? So, shout out to Christian for that question. Obviously, yes, he is. He lives in Stockholm, so I'm assuming he's Swedish. Asking about more Swedes in the Ducks lineup or in the Ducks organization. I guess my quick thoughts on this. I feel like one of those guys is. Actually, no, I'll say it with certainty. I feel like one of those guys is definitely on the team next season. If you just look at the if you look at the contracts that are up. I believe, yeah, Bieksa is off the books after this season. Boschman is off the books. So that's going to open up spots for guys. I would say unless Larson gets traded, which to me would almost – it's starting to feel like it could be a bad decision if you look at the grand scheme of things, because I don't know if an Evander Kane makes this team that much better to where I put them over, you know, actual contenders in the Western Conference right now. But yeah, I would say Larson for sure. Well, yeah, he'll for sure make it next season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not?
And I'm kind of looking right now and just to get a kind of idea where they've kind of been in the AHL. And I absolutely despise plus minus as a stat, but the availability of stats aren't great. So to kind of at least get some sort of an idea of what they've done defensively, Larson is second on the team in plus minus at plus +3. And so
there you go.
A lot of people are very, very high minuses on the goals, which is not that great.
Well, they've been without their team for the entire season. So
yes, and Pettersson is even on the season. So I definitely think that they could have a spot with the team. It's hard to really say. The Larson really didn't impress too much. I think he was injured for most of training camp. Pettersson definitely, I think, was super impressive in. Training camp and during that stuff, and I would not be shocked if he kind of received a call up at some point during the season and get a little bit of shot kind of in the same
Pettersson?
Yeah, Pettersson.
Really?
I mean,
interesting.
You look at what they've done, they've called up Walensky and sent down Magna. It wouldn't shock me if they just kind of have this rotating door to have a guy come up and be that seventh defenseman and jump in where needed. So I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Pettersson or even Larson kind of get a call up and kind of get a game or two. Who knows what happens with injuries, with how injured this team has been this year. Some guy could go down. So knock on wood, that doesn't happen. But wouldn't shock me if they come up. I think next season, one of them definitely has a spot on the team, though.
Yeah, I feel like their concern with Pettersson, and this could be a little conjecture by me, but I feel like he's 6'4", and listed on Cap Friendly as 176. And if you watch him play, I got to watch him in training camp, and he is very gangly. Like, he is tall. Yes. Lanky, and I feel like the Ducks, kind of knowing what they value, I feel like they want him to maybe get a little bigger, a little stronger before he really makes that jump. But with Larson, it's interesting because last season in training camp, I thought he actually looked pretty good. I thought, and he made the team.
Yeah.
So clearly they saw something. And this season, it's not so much, it's kind of the, I feel like half, maybe even more than half of evaluation when it comes to prospects is expectations. And with a guy like Larson, expected quite a bit of him because, you know, he had looked good. He's been highly touted, and his stats are pretty good in the AHL this season. So I was, you know, I wanted to see something out of him, and the fact that he just didn't really wow me probably plays a big factor into my evaluation. Same thing with a guy like Sam Steele, where you hear so much about him, you see the point totals in the WHL, and to see him, you know, kind of come out and not really wow anyone in training camp was kind of, the expectations worked against him. On the flip side of that, you have a guy like Kevin Waugh, who no one expects anything out of, so if he does anything good, it's a positive. Or even, you know, really in training camp, a guy like Austin Ortega, I remember, just, you know, smaller forward. Giovanni Fiore, just guys you had never heard of, and the fact that they do anything, we kind of sing their praises for it. So I try to check myself when it comes to expectations, but I like to think that overall Larson just wasn't super impressive in camp. I don't know. That's my ramble on, like, scouting.
Yeah, I am looking through the hashtag ACPod Twitter hashtag, and kind of like Christian De La Rosa did, if you have any questions throughout the day, throw it on Twitter with hashtag ACPod. Typically throughout the podcast, I'll kind of go on, or Felix will go on, and just look at that hashtag to find out if anyone's asked anything. So we have a question from Kestrel Scott. How much longer do we keep throwing Richie, Juice, and Boge out there? It's time for a change. At least give Holzer a chance because it's not working with current pairing. Hashtag ACPod. hashtag we look lost out there.
Wow, that's
he's got a good hashtag game at the end there.
That's a pretty tough hashtag. Well, his Twitter name is hashtag Scott hashtag, so clearly the hashtag game is on lock there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like really we're not going to see much of a change in this lineup because I don't think they love Holzer, and I think that they clearly love Bieksa, and they clearly love Beauchemin. So unless there's an injury there or another phantom Brandon Montour scratching, I feel like we're not really going to see much of Holzer unless there's like a fourth line spot that becomes available. I don't know. I feel like we're entering an interesting kind of like doghouse period for Brandon Montour, because I feel like outside of the last few minutes tonight where he played with Fowler, didn't see a ton of him. He's kind of getting phased down the power play and got scratched recently. I feel like there might be a little something going on there, and he tried this one play in the first period where he went between the legs, not looking to clear it out of the zone, and it ended up being offside, but it went right to a Vegas player, and then at the end of the third period, as a D-man skates it kind of 1-on-5, turns it over at the blue line, or the opposing blue line. I feel like Randy Carlisle is not the guy to try those plays with if your name isn't Ryan Getzlaff, so.
Yeah, and on Richie, I think that Richie's kind of, I would love, and we've both kind of beaten this drum.
Well, he got a chance tonight. Yeah. First line minutes in clutch time. So.
And he didn't look that great in those minutes. And weirdly, he looked much better in the fourth line minutes that he got, and got lots of chances in that. So
yeah.
I actually think Richie was all right tonight. I still am going to beat that drum that I'd like to see him get sent down. If we're going to keep throwing, he's at the age where you can send him down to let him develop a little bit more and kind of get that confidence back. But
but who do you call up though? Like who takes his spot?
I mean, Derek Grant, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I really don't mind Richie as a fourth liner. And you know, I feel like he's had enough experience now. And like we said, he looked really good in that first period. So as did everyone. So to be fair.
Yeah. I did want to give a brief World Junior update also.
Oh yes. Let's hear it.
Seeing as you brought up Sam Steele. So Canada beat Finland yesterday 4-2 with Sam Steele getting, I believe it was the second goal of the game.
Yeah, a little tap in
on the power play. And then he also had the opener today against Slovakia, another little tap in. He's just kind of finding himself good spots. And then Maxime Comtois found himself a goal in the third period also, the fifth goal of the game. And I haven't been able to really watch a whole lot. I was able to listen to the first game, and kind of everything I was hearing was Comtois has been really impressive. He's playing a third/fourth line role, penalty killing duty, and just kind of using his body, and that's really kind of good to see and kind of surprising. I didn't really expect him to make this team, being a second rounder, being underage, seeing as he could play in World Juniors again next year. So kind of surprising and good.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a boon for the Ducks kind of development and farm system that a guy like Courtois, who, I mean, I got to watch him up close in training camp, and I wasn't really wowed by him, but you could also see how raw he was, just fresh out of junior. I believe he's a little young for his year. I'm probably wrong about that. But, yeah, I mean, for him to get a spot on Team Canada and to play on that stage in those kind of high-leverage minutes, it's going to be a great experience for him. And, you know, if he is as good as he looks right now or even anywhere close to it, if the Ducks kind of get that solid third or fourth line center of the future, that's great. Probably you would want a little better for a first round pick. But still, I mean, it's good because I think the big issue for a lot of young players when they come in is, you know, if they don't have a lot of skill and there's not much structure to their game, they don't have a whole lot to offer. And I feel like Kevin Waugh may have struggled a bit with that in the first couple of years of his pro career. But for Courtois to get that structure in his game, and he's only going to get faster and stronger and presumably more skilled. So he could turn out to be maybe a bit of a dark horse pick for the Ducks in the first round. It wouldn't be the first time the Ducks kind of steal a guy.
Courtois was actually in the second round. The Ducks didn't have a first rounder this past year. They had the two second rounders.
Oh, the Patrick Eves trade. That's right.
So he was actually a second rounder, so that's kind of why it was even more surprising. And then moving on to the much more impressive victory, the U.S. beat Denmark 9-0.
Who cares?
God, we're just gonna win it all. Take the entire tournament.
I hate how Canada has been losing to the USA in World Juniors lately.
It's so bad. It's so good.
It's so awful. It's not good.
It's the way it should be.
It's okay. It's because we beat you guys in the Olympics, so ultimately who cares?
I mean, who cares about this year's Olympics though? Are we really gonna count it?
Yeah, we should. It's still outside of the
I'm gonna count it.
I don't care what happens.
For all those long-term Ducks fans out there, Dan Sexton looks to be on Team Canada. Is he on Team Canada or Team USA?
I'm starting the hype train now.
The Dan Sexton hype train. Big Sexy's coming back. Oh no, he's American. Yeah. He's American, so he'll be on Team USA.
I mean, hopefully, Team USA. I mean, I hope they figure out that they should like pick guys in their team who like can score goals every now and then compared to the World Cup atrocity. That was brutal, by the way.
Troy Terry looks like he's probably going to have to do most of the goal scoring. Getting back to the US-Denmark game, Max Jones opened up the scoring with a really nice play. He kind of was able to bring the puck off the boards, was able to shake a guy off his shoulder and get some space, drag it to the middle and have a nice little shot for the opening goal of that game. All joking aside, not a whole lot to take on this game. Denmark's not very good. The U.S. is very, very good.
They're okay.
Lots of first rounders.
I think there's another Tkachuk on that team. Brady Tkachuk?
There is another Tkachuk, and he's going to be a first rounder in this upcoming year.
Yeah, I'm actually very intrigued by this 2018 draft class because you have Dalina, but there's a lot of names. I mean, Sveshnikov looks good, so I'm excited. I kind of stopped paying attention to the draft for a couple of years, but This class could definitely be an interesting one. I really can't wait to see who Rasmus Dahlin goes to, because I feel like, I mean, who's the worst team in the league right now? Like the Sabres, the Coyotes?
The Coyotes.
I almost feel like it would be a waste if one of those teams got him, because you know they're going to mess it up somehow.
The Sabres could use him.
Yes, I would actually rather, and this is not to slight the Coyotes, but I would rather see Dahlin on a team that already has another star. You know, and maybe Clayton Keller becomes that guy. Definitely don't want to see the Oilers get him somehow, because if you ever miss the playoffs with Connor McDavid on your team, you don't deserve to be in like an NHL team.
Why did you have to bring that up? I mean, they had three or four first overall picks in a row, and then they won it. They won Connor McDavid. So
I mean, to echo my old co-host in the Garage Hockey Podcast, Joe Berger, that I believe his line was the Oilers don't deserve to be in the NHL. And I think that is definitely apt right now. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Like, but you know what? Maybe I'll make some enemies here, but I'm kind of happy because all the Oilers media and front office and the whole, I almost swore on the pod, the whole cohort of that franchise last year took a victory lap about how they didn't need analytics, about how they didn't need to listen to anyone, but you know,
the Chris Russell fan club.
The Chris Russell fan club, the Milan, and now look what happened. So ha. Anyway. I just have a visceral dislike for that, the level of smugness around that organization.
I dislike that organization a lot. Getting back
it's
to
just
World...
like, what's your deal? Oh, sorry. Anyway.
Getting back to World Juniors, yeah. Sweden beat Belarus 6-1, but Ole Eriksson Ek probably isn't going to play a whole lot this tournament. He was the third string goalie. So, kind of makes sense. He's the underager. He's probably there just to experience it. He'll probably be playing next year, I would expect. So,
yeah, Ducks goalie of the future, maybe?
Possibly.
I mean, if Gibson keeps playing like he did tonight.
Trade bait. Let's go with that. Sorry, you're hearing it for the first time here. Trade bait. Ole Eriksson Ek.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see.
We got a couple stuff in the Mixler chat. Christopher Iyer says, any thoughts on what lineup looks like if Eves come back? I've kind of said this a couple times on the podcast.
I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah, I just kind of different rumblings that I've heard is don't expect Eves to come back this season. If he does, that's kind of gravy. That's the icing on the cake, but don't expect it. I think the lineup as it's currently constituted plus Corey Perry is kind of what we're going to be seeing for most of the season. Unless maybe a trade for like Evander Kane happens. And then the other thing is Paul brought up that Larson has missed some games in the AHL, and at one point he was ahead of Montour, which, I mean, I guess he was because he got a shot with the team last year and Montour had to really earn his spot. But that also could have been due to the fact that Larson wanted to go back to Sweden if he wasn't in the NHL.
Yeah, there's a lot at play there.
Yes.
I mean, it's I don't want to talk too much about Eves just because, A, I don't really know a whole lot. I don't think anyone really does.
Yeah.
But a great Christmas photo he posted on Instagram.
Yes.
So, great. Good-looking family.
His Twitter photos are always on point.
Yeah, he's kind of got that sneaky, like, social media game on lock.
Yeah.
So, shout out to him. We got anything else, or you want to wrap up here?
I think that's pretty much it.
Okay, well, Jake, you enjoy the snow. I'm definitely jealous.
Yep.
That's pretty cool that you're going to get to snowboard while I'm just at work and slaving away here, mm-hmm. But that's fine.
Yeah. I do want to say Happy New Year to everyone listening to the pod.
Yes.
This is going to be my last podcast of 2017.
No. Wait, I'm just finding this out now.
I feel like I've told you this, Felix. I'm sorry,
but
I'm breaking your heart.
My memory is not the best, so yeah.
Yes, this will be my last podcast of 2017, so Happy New Year to everyone. Want to say thank you to you, Felix, for having me on this so far. It's been a blast talking with you, and we're probably going to do a bunch more going forward. It's been a blast interacting with everyone.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have Jake. It's been a very strong end to the 2017 year for the Anaheim Calling podcast, and definitely will continue into 2018. Jeez, that means I have to figure out who's going to come on. I'm going to have to go knock on CJ's door, see what he's up to.
Call up the Kiwi.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, John wants to get on. So, and we're talking prospects here, and he's the prospect guru, so I should get him on. But in any event, good pod as always. Jake, thank you for a strong 2017. Mm-hmm. Looking to a lot more in 2018. I feel like it's going to be a good year. So that'll do it for tonight's pod. As always, you can find us on iTunes. Leave us a review there if you enjoy the show. Please, please, please leave us a review. I mean, we've gotten a lot of good reviews so far, and the more we get, it helps the show tremendously get noticed, and you know, hopefully, attract some more listeners and everything that comes along with that. SoundCloud.com/ACPod, Anaheim Calling the podcast on the SoundCloud app. Follow us on there so that we pop up right into your feed. Give it a heart if you enjoy the show. Anaheim Calling. On Twitter, AnaheimCalling.com for all your Ducks content needs. I mean, you got Jake's weekly rankings, you got prospect updates from John Broadbent, you got the occasional article from me, you got the podcast. I mean, Anaheim Calling is just, you don't need to go anywhere else for Ducks content except Eric Stevens. So,
yep, it's been a strong season for us so far.
I would recommend the website. There's a lot more good stuff on the way. Jake is on Twitter at ReindeerGames91. Tweeting out the pod, the Mixler chat, his rankings. I'm on Twitter myself, at Felix_Sicard. Tweeting out a bunch of Duck stuff all the time. So, guys, anyway, Jake, thank you for the good year or the good few months here. We're going to keep going 2018. So that'll be it. Two more pods on the way. I believe Friday the Ducks play. I never pull up the schedule in time.
Calgary.
Calgary on Friday, and then
I believe it's Coyotes Arizona on at 1 Sunday. P.M. on Sunday. Yes.
And yeah, so an early game on Sunday, so we're going to get that one out of the way for New Year's Eve. But fear not, we will have you covered for New Year's Eve before you slip off into the night and hopefully drink responsibly. I wouldn't condone anything otherwise. So that'll do it for today's show. We will catch you guys Friday night. Talk to you soon.
Bye.